Good afternoon. It is 1:31 on November 8th, 2018. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of North Dakota Public Service Commission. I call this meeting to order. I'm joined by Commissioners Brian Krasius and Julie Fedorchak. So we have a quorum. I forgot about opening comments. None come to mind right immediately, except for that election season is over and we're all back, and I'm glad to be back and have Brian back and to continue on with this trio. Other than that, nothing comes to mind immediately. Commissioner Krasius, did you have any opening comments?
No, I can't think of anything off. And, well, I will say this. Regardless, a lot of candidates ran in this last election, and regardless of the outcome, I do congratulate them for putting themselves out there, especially in the current environment, and making that personal decision to run. So, hats off to everyone, and then congratulations on a lighter note to the public in general for getting their televisions and radios and newspapers back.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
And this year, the phones and the and the social media and everything. I mean, you couldn't really be any place but your own bathroom. We avoid the mailbox. I mean,
right.
It's crazy. I want to congratulate my colleagues. They worked really hard on this election and did a wonderful job covering the state and really talking about the issues and staying positive and doing your duty to reach out to and be accessible to the voters on issues that are important to them and being a voice for the Public Service Commission, what we do and why it matters. So I really appreciate all your guys' hard work, and I'm excited to be able to work with you for 6 more years with Randy. Well, I'm here for 4, so I guess we'll stick with that. 2 more for sure for Brian, which I'm sure will turn into another as well. So it's great to have you both as colleagues. I think you do a great job for the citizens of the state. Also, just came back from Rand Kelsch's funeral and wanted, I know we all were there. It was a beautiful funeral. And she was a wonderful public servant who really made a difference in her community of Mandan and in the state of North Dakota. And she was a real mentor to a lot of people and a friend to a lot of people. It was fun to see what a bipartisan group it was there. And that's really a tribute to Rayanne and how she served and the hard work ethic that she had, her fun personality, and the seriousness with which she took on issues and tried to make a difference. And so she does leave a big hole for sure in her community of Mandan, for sure in the whole greater community of Bismarck and for North Dakota as well. But I think she has a long legacy that will live on for a long time through her family, her kids, and through all the legislators that she mentioned, mentored. So may she rest in peace.
Well said. Thank you. Okay, one consent item was removed, so there are 8 still on the agenda. So I move approval of the items on the consent calendar plus the minutes of the previous meetings.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, RC1, I move the commission adopt the order revoking warehouse license and returning and ordering return of license in Forbes Equity Exchange license number 290 Forbes North Dakota suspension case number GE-18-356.
Second.
On July 30th of this year, we received notice that the certificate of insurance issued to Forbes Equity Exchange would be canceled on November 1st. The public grain warehouse license issued to Forbes Equity was suspended effective October 3rd. The company had until October 31st to procure and file adequate insurance, but they did not. Our Century Code provides that the commission may revoke the license of any warehouseman for cause upon notice and hearing. Forbes was notified that they had until October 31st to submit a written request for hearing and no request for hearing was received. So with this order, what we're ordering is that the license issued to Forbes Equity Exchange is revoked effective November 1st, Forbes shall keep the suspension notice conspicuously posted in the office window or on the front driveway door, that they may not receive additional grain for purchase, storage, shipping, or processing, and that they may not sell or ship any grain without submitting a written request to the commission and receiving commission authorization. And finally, that they shall return public grain warehouse license number 290 to the commission.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Randy, can you give a little bit more? I've seen the memo, but I haven't had a chance to connect with Conrad on this. Has the staff had any personal contact with the folks at this warehouse? Are they returning calls? Do we have any more information in terms of what their intentions are here?
There has been some interaction. I don't think the intentions are completely clear, except for that it will probably be for sale, or okay. I don't sense that there's a likelihood of the cooperative reopening it. As far as we've been able to ascertain, there's no egg producers that are owed any money, but I'm still not completely confident that we would know for sure.
Okay.
And so there's still some more, I think, I's to dot and T's to cross before we can be completely sure that no one is owed here, no one of the ag producers that we're responsible for. And so certainly don't want, and there is some grain on hand, mm-hmm. And so we certainly don't want that moving without us being involved in it, so that we can make sure and hold on to those assets, and also don't want them continuing business because they are closed and their insurance has lapsed.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Okay. Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Number two, I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Mid-Continent Communications designated eligible carrier application, case number PU-18-373.
Second.
On October 29th, Mid-Continent filed this application for designation as a eligible telecommunications carrier for purpose of receiving Connect America funding in specified census blocks in rural North Dakota. Mid-Continent is a competitive local exchange carrier that offers voice over internet protocol, through its wired and wireless networks. The issues to be considered in this matter are whether the applicant is qualified, what area should be designated, and is the designation of the applicant as an ETC in the public interest. This would allow public comments and requests for hearings until December 20th of 2018. As you know, these maps always look funny because these census blocks, and it's hard to understand why it doesn't come in nice, neat areas, but they never do. I will just say that generally these are in areas around communities, and I'm not going to name them all because there's lots of small ones, but very generally they'd be around the Grafton area, the Grand Forks area, Mayville, Fargo, Wahpeton, and Jamestown. And so it's mostly on the east, the very eastern, probably 20% of the state, except for around the Jamestown area is another area.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move the commission adopt the order granting request to discontinue business in Reimer Seed Company, license number 1148 of Carrington, North Dakota. Discontinue business case number GE-18-377.
Second.
On October 26th, the commission received a request to discontinue business from Reimer Seed Company for this warehouse at Carrington. Reimer Seed notified us that business will no longer be conducted at the facility. The warehouse is empty and there are no outstanding storage obligations. So staff recommends the request be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And lastly, I move the commission adopt the order granting request to discontinue business in Cargill Incorporated, license number 1066, Spiritwood, North Dakota, discontinue business, case number GE-18-378.
Second.
On November 2nd, we received a request to discontinue business from Cargill for this grain warehouse at Spiritwood. Cargill notified us that business is no longer conducted at the facility. The warehouse is empty and there are no outstanding storage obligations. Cargill does, however, continue to operate a state facility at Wahpeton and operates as a facility-based grain buyer at West Fargo. Staff recommends the request be approved. And I will just add, in case it's not obvious, this is the malting plant that, you know, you've probably read or heard things about that is closed now, so that's the case we're dealing with here. A tremendous facility that hopefully will find a new purpose soon.
Mm-hmm. We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Commissioner Crashes.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the commission adopt the order in Northern States Power Company customer credit DOE settlement 2014 to 2016, application case number PU-16-19, and Northern States Power Company earnings sharing 2017 rates case number PU-18-200.
Second.
On December 8th, 2017, in case number PU-16-19, Northern States Power Company filed a petition to return just over $788,000. As a credit on the customer bill representing North Dakota's share of NSP's 2017 settlement payment from the United States Department of Energy for DOE's failure to provide permanent storage for spent nuclear fuel. On January 10th, 2018, the Commission issued a notice of opportunity for hearing, giving until February 16th, 2018, for receiving written comments and hearing requests. None were received. And then on June 13th, 2018, the Commission discussed the petition with NSP and Commission staff during an informal hearing. On June 7th, 2018, in case number PU-18-200, NSP filed a petition that included a request for approval to issue a one-time bill credit regarding excess 2017 earnings of $2,983,461 in compliance with the Commission's decision in an earlier case. And that was case number PU-12-813. On July 9th, 2018, the Commission issued a notice of opportunity for hearing, which provided until August 20th, 2018, for receiving comments and hearing requests. None were received in that one as well. The application in case number PU-16-19 is, again, for a credit to customers of $788,140, and then the second one, as mentioned, in 18-200, it would be a one-time bill credit for the $2,983,461. This amounts to approximately $18.17 for the average residential customer, 18% of that coming from the nuclear spent fuel portion, the DOE settlement, so right around $3.33. And then the other 82% would be from over-earnings in 2017 for a total of $14.84. The DOE, and I think I mentioned this previously, so I won't go into a lot of detail, but it ties back to the spent storage facility at Yucca Mountain. And so now that money is going back to the utilities, to the companies, because our, to those, I shouldn't say utilities, but to those with nuclear facilities, having the nuclear facilities, because they're actually storing on site, in this particular instance, dry cask storage, if I remember correctly. So all in all, it will result in an average credit back to customers of $18.17. And I think it's appropriate that the money does, in fact, go back to the customers, both for the over-earnings and excess fees collected for nuclear storage.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Just to elaborate a little bit on the excess earnings, that Xcel's last rate increase was a number of years ago, and they've been in a moratorium now for a couple of years, well, 2016 and 17 for sure. And in extending that rate moratorium, the commission and advocacy staff and the company included in the agreement that any excess earnings over their allowable rate of return, 100% of those would go back to customers, and that's indeed what has happened here. So we often get questions about this type of thing from customers and questioning why they get a rate of return and why they're allowed to earn a certain amount, and then, you know, what happens if they earn more. And in this case, those excess earnings are returned back to the customers and will be credited to them. And so I think this is an example of some pretty good work a few years back to protect customers that is now paying off for the customers in the Xcel territory in North Dakota.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Great Plains Natural Gas Company Gas Service, Tariffs and Rates, case number PU-17-75.
Second.
Okay, on a lighter note, I keep seeing a doubling up of the text because I'm trying a different combination with my contacts. So I stop. And, okay, is that a 1166 or is it just a 16? But or whatever it might be. But I think I've gotten it right so far. So
I assure you it's November, not January.
It's starting to feel a lot like January, but
that's all fair.
Okay, so back to the serious part of this. On February 3rd, 2017, Great Plains Natural Gas Company, which is a division of MDU Resources Group Incorporated, filed an application to revise its natural gas tariff in compliance with the commission's order in case number PU-16-604. An issue, a notice of opportunity for hearing was issued on March 1st, 2017, providing until April 15th, 2017 for comments and hearing requests. None were received. And then on December 29th, 2017, Commission advocacy staff filed an agreement between advocacy staff and Great Plains for an extension of rate suspension in order to address the tax reform issues related to the implementation of the TCJA, Tax Cut and Jobs Act. On January 10th, 2018, in case number PU-17-490, the commission opened an investigation into the effects of federal tax reform, the TCJA. And on April 20th, advocacy staff, also of 2018, advocacy staff filed its initial comments in 17-490, including comments on the impact of the Great Plains and the incident case. Then on October 19th, a settlement was filed. A settlement agreement was filed between Great Plains and advocacy staff. The settlement agreement provides miscellaneous tariff changes and a reduction in natural gas rates to yield an annual revenue decrease of $168,306 or 4% of Great Plains' annual sales revenue. And this that 4% in terms of reduction is retroed to the beginning, back to the beginning of January 1st, 2018, consistent with other TCJA cases, and will end with the implementation of the new rates. So there is that time period that would be involved. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by December 12, 2018. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceeding and the reasons for requesting a hearing. If deemed appropriate, the commission could determine these matters without a hearing. And just one more thing to add, Great Plains Natural Gas serves Wahpeton. And I don't know if it extends beyond the city of Wahpeton, Pat, or if it's essentially Wahpeton. Okay, so basically Wahpeton, they have a little over 1,800 residential customers, although what's interesting is that in terms of total sales volume, that residential base of, it's under 2,000 customers, is approximately 6% of total sales volume. So the bulk of the natural gas is being used on the commercial side of the equation, which I thought was interesting when we were trying to break it down. So it's not one that we have seen very often, is my understanding, and part of the reason is just the cost of processing a rate case. And ultimately, that does go back to the customer. So if they're not coming in for a rate case and things seem reasonable, from everything I've seen, because there's a lot of history prior to my arrival at the commission, that it's been done very effectively.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, next up for me is BK3. I move the commission adopt the order on settlement to Northern States Power Company, tax reform effects, gas utility rates, case number PU-18-156.
Second.
On January 10th, similar to the other cases related to the TCJ, the commission opened an investigation into the effects of the federal tax reform. On February 15th, NSP filed its initial comments in the case, and subsequently, the commission opened the instant case to specifically address the impacts of the federal tax reform on NSP's gas distribution utility operations and affected ratepayers. The settlement itself, a series of things occurred. Notice of opportunity was issued back in September 17th. No response was received. October 24th, 2018, advocacy staff filed a settlement agreement with corrected signature pages. And then on October 31st, 2018, the commission discussed the matter with NSP and advocacy staff at an informal hearing. The settlement agreement provides that the savings resulting from the TCJA will be retained by NSP to offset costs of NSP's Fargo manufactured gas plant remediation project, thereby reducing the level of remediation costs that may be requested in future rates. The settlement agreement provides, among other things, that NSP will amortize deferred Fargo MGP remediation costs beginning in 2018 at a rate of $1.25 million per year until fully recovered. NSP stipulates that proceeds from any sale of the manufactured gas processing facility remediation site will be used to offset the amount of the regulatory asset reflecting the total cost of the remediation. So in other words, if there is a gain on the sale of the property, that would be used to offset the amount of the regulatory asset. So that would be taken into account for the good of the ratepayer. The TCJA savings are approximately $1 to $1.5 million per year. The anticipated cleanup costs from a 12 to 16 year period would be $1.25 million. So it's essentially right in the same area, and it's just coincidental that this would occur. But past precedents for gas plant cleanup dates back to 2001, the Grand Forks Municipal Gas Plant. where the company was allowed to recover close to $3 million in cost to clean that site up. There was a Bismarck situation, Bismarck manufactured gas plant. That was 2010. That was just under $1 million in terms of total cleanup costs. And from a legal standpoint, I was talking to our folks here, and you certainly don't like to see this. This is considered a reasonable cost of doing business in terms of recovery. And these things dated back to a time where no one was looking to the future in terms of what would the impact be and would there be any. It wasn't known at the time and probably wasn't even recognized that there would be a future problem. So a bit of cleanup, obviously, to take care of the situation, but the timing works out in such a way that the TCJA savings will be applied to clean up the site, and then that would hold rates in effect.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Well, this is an interesting convergent of two issues that we've been tracking for a long time. The manufactured gas project has been something that we've been following, that remediation effort, for several years, and have been in really close contact with the company over what they were finding, what they knew existed through the whole discovery phase, and then hearing what their initial remediation was going to be and asking them about the costs, and really have been in close contact with them on that. So in the last half a year, it's been coming clear. We have had a clearer idea of what those costs are going to be. And so now approaching the time where we're going to have to be going back to customers to help fund those. And so the availability of these tax cuts to help ease the burden of a rate case, a rate increase on customers, I think it really comes at the right time. I've been one since the first minute I heard about the tax cuts who has been promoting that those should go back to the customers, and I continue to believe that. But in this case, sending them back to the customers and then raising rates shortly thereafter to pay for this manufactured gas plant remediation doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So I think this is the best way to do it. It's a good way to do it, and it also allows for the company to continue making progress on that project and then coming to us when they have a full understanding of the complete costs, at which point we will go through those with a fine-tooth comb and make sure that we agree that they have been as prudent as possible, as efficient as possible, and held those costs to as low amount as possible for the customers who have to pay for them. So I think this is a good approach. It's a good balance of addressing these issues, and I really want to thank staff and the company for coming together with this proposal.
I would just add to that to reemphasize the point, because it should not be lost, that it's not just a carte blanche check that they have to cover costs down there on that gas plant remediation. They need to be following through with every avenue to make sure that they could get whatever insurance settlements might be available, and also whether there's other players involved, because that has not been a continuous stream of ownership of that property. And I'm still somewhat frustrated that a lot of people tend to want to cast all of the responsibility to them, and I'm not sure that they're not just being looked at as an easy mark sometimes. And so we are going to be monitoring this closely to make sure that they are only paying the costs that they are responsible for. And secondly, just, I guess, to reiterate it one more time, the timing of this, to have followed through with a lowering of rates to because of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, and then almost immediately yo-yo it back up to that amount, or maybe even a little bit more, to start paying the costs and the remediation, just seemed like kind of a confusing exercise in futility for the consumers. So I think in this particular case, it does make very good sense to do as is being proposed.
You know, the one thing that I looked at in all of this, this indirectly does pass the TCJA savings back to the customer. Because as you mentioned, we would just yo-yo back and forth. It would just be moving money around. So I think for me, the bigger question in terms of when we really started getting into this was, what's the precedence been in the past? Is this, should this be recoverable from an expense standpoint? And when I was comfortable with the fact that it had been in the past, and I think it's reasonable in this case, then it was really the vehicle to get the TCJA benefit back to the customer without changing rates.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move the commission adopt the order on consent agreement in Public Service Commission, Northern Improvement Company, damage prevention enforcement case number PU-18-313.
Second.
On August 29th, 2018, the commission received a North Dakota one-call complaint from MDU Utilities, or Montana Dakota Utilities, MDU, alleging a violation by Northern Improvement Company of North Dakota Century Code Chapter 49-23, which is the one-call excavation notice system. On August 31st, 2018, the commission sent a letter to Northern enclosing the complaint, and on September 18th, 2018, the Public Service Commission advocacy staff and Northern filed a consent agreement for the resolution of the complaint. Essentially, the complaint alleges a violation by Northern of North Dakota Century Code for failure to conduct an excavation in a careful and prudent manner. The complaint indicated that Northern hit a 3/4-inch steel natural gas service line while conducting street project excavation, resulting in approximately $4,000 in damage. The incident affected one natural gas service customer. And again, to reiterate, North Dakota Century Code provides that to avoid damage and to minimize interference, a ticket holder shall conduct the excavation in a careful and prudent manner. The consent agreement indicates that Northern violated North Dakota Century Code by failing to conduct an excavation in a careful and prudent manner. And under the consent agreement, Northern agrees to be assessed a civil penalty of $1,500 payable to the North Dakota Public Service Commission within 10 business days of service of this order adopting consent agreement. So again, it's just a reminder that to all operators and excavators to be vigilant, to make sure you follow the one-call law, and to realize that you don't always know what's below. In this case, the lines were marked. That wasn't the issue, but I just want people to be safe out there.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Northern States Power Company Transmission Facility Cost Recovery 2019 rates, case number PU-18-364.
Second.
On October 5th, 2018, Northern States Power Company filed its 2019 transmission cost recovery rider. The purpose of the rider is to recover costs from NSP's North Dakota Electric customers for 41 previously approved projects and 10 new projects, as well as net expenses from the Mid-Continent Independent System Operator MISO billings. The proposal would decrease the TCR rate from 0.003270 per kilowatt to 0.002379 per kilowatt. So the average customer, in terms of what does this mean for the bill, for average residential customer, I should say, consuming 750 kilowatt hours can expect or would expect a 0.67 cents per month, 67 cents per month, billing reduction compared with the 2018 charge. So it would go down by that amount. Those interested are invited to comment on the application in writing. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceeding and reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by December 20th, 2018. If deemed appropriate, the commission can determine the matter without a hearing. And for more information, people can contact the Public Service Commission at 701-328-2400.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And my final item, I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing the Northern States Power Company Renewable Resource Cost Recovery 2019 rates, case number PU-18-368.
Second.
Making sure I had my numbers correct. It's like deja vu. On October 10th, 2018, Northern States Power Company, NSP, filed a request for approval of its 2019 renewable energy rider. The purpose of this rider is to recover costs from NSP's North Dakota electric customers for two previously approved projects. Okay. One new project located in North Dakota and three projects located outside of North Dakota that are expected to be in service in 2019. This proposal would increase the rate from the current charge of 0.00285 per kilowatt hour to 0.001351 per kilowatt hour. The proposed 2019 renewable energy rider would be applied to all energy billed to each customer effective January 1st, 2019. And the result of the change for the average residential customer at 750 kilowatt hours per month again would be an approximate 80 cent per month billing increase compared with the 2018 change. So in this particular case, it would be going up by 80 cents per month. The issues to be considered in this proceeding are whether the investments and associated costs for the resources qualify for recovery, whether the incurred costs are reasonable and prudent, and whether the rate adjustments are consistent with the terms of the NSP, terms of NSP's tariff. Those interested in writing are invited to comment on the application in writing. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceedings and the reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by December 20th, 2018, and if deemed appropriate, the commission can determine the matter without a hearing. Again, the number in terms of contacting the Public Service Commission is 701-328-2400. And the two previously approved projects, if I have this right, one was the Border Winds project and the other was the Courtney Wind project. And then the one new project that I referenced as just a new project would be Foxtail Wind in North Dakota.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none?
I would just say that I noticed this and the previous motion were both prepared by Adam, so we sure don't use any amount of time allowing people to settle in before they go right in the deep water in this job, do we? So, good job to Adam.
Yeah, he did a good job.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Mr. Fedorchak.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the commission adopt the order on reissuing certificate in Langdon Wind LLC, Langdon Renewables LLC, transfer of site certificate citing application case number PU-18-336.
Second.
So in May of 27, the commission issued its first certificate permit for this facility for 159 megawatts, the Langdon Wind LLC facility in Cavalier County. And then in 2008, the commission issued an amended certificate, expanding it by 40.5 megawatts in the same location. And then later in 2008, they amended the certificate again and transferred the 40.5 addition to Otter Tail Power. So then in September of this year, we had a issue with the company and issued the third amended certificate of site compatibility, which removed the 159 megawatt limitation because the company had some plans that they wanted to make some improvements on the site that would create more efficiencies and also would increase the megawatts that would be able to be produced through some of those new efficiencies. And so we approved that in September. And then a couple of weeks later, the company came back and filed an application to transfer this third amended certificate from Langdon Wind to Langdon Renewables LLC. Both of these companies are wholly owned indirect subsidiaries of NextEra Energy Resources, which is a subsidiary of NextEra Energy in Florida. And so the issue to that we will be we had a number of back and forths with the company on this and gathering information. NextEra is a national developer of wind energy projects that reports consolidated revenues of $17.2 billion and approximately 47.79 megawatts of net generating capacity as of year end 2017. We did issue a notice opportunity for hearing. There was no request for hearing received by the public. So having considered this matter, the commission finds that Langdon Renewables LLC has agreed to and is able to comply with the terms and conditions of the certificate, and the requested transfer is compatible with the public interest.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. I move the commission issue a notice of intent to amend order and notice of opportunity for hearing in Meadowlark Wind No. 1 LLC New Frontier Wind Energy Project, McHenry County Siting Application Case Number PU-11-69.
Second.
Thank you, Brian. This is a request. So in 2012, the commission granted a siting permit to this wind facility, a 102-megawatt New Frontier Wind Energy Project in McHenry County. And then in 2017, we issued an order of continuing suitability for that project. In November of this year, Meadowlark Wind filed a request for a setback determination, and Meadowlark reports partially constructed turbines, two of them, were mistakenly located within turbine setback areas. They are requesting a variance for the placement of one of those turbines and a clarification of compliance for the other turbine, that both of which would allow the turbines to remain in their present locations. They're half to three quarters completed at this point, including the foundation bases, and so the company is requesting that they be allowed to leave them in place and has filed a fair amount of information on those requests. So the issues in this notice of opportunity for hearing are whether the commission has the authority to grant a variance to the turbine setback area, and if so, should one be granted, whether one of the turbines, T6, complies with the order of continuing suitability, whether the proposed amendments to the order of continuing suitability will continue to produce minimal adverse effects on the environment and on the welfare of citizens of North Dakota, whether these proposed amendments will continue to be compatible with environmental preservation and the efficient use of resources, and whether the proposed amendments will continue to minimize adverse human and environmental impact while ensuring continuing system reliability and integrity, ensuring that energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly and timely fashion. Any comments and requests for hearing must be received by December 12th of 2018. And I have also asked that we set up a time for an informal hearing in our admin portion of the meeting on this issue so we can get started talking amongst ourselves about that with staff, and that certainly is going to be broadcast and available for any of the public that might be interested in it. But just to start getting ourselves more familiar with the issues and talking with our attorney about them as well and what kind of leeway we have on these issues, potential leeway.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I'll just say that I'm glad we're going to set something up, because, and I know it's sort of a traditional motion, but the way these always read caused me some concern, and in this case specifically, the words being in here, the intent to amend order, I and knowing or understanding at least that these two structures are somewhere in the process of construction, and I don't want to send the signal that if they can just get by to December 12th and no one requests a hearing, that the commission signaled their intent to approve these things. I'm not there yet. This request just came in less than a week ago. I don't feel I've thoroughly analyzed it, and so I don't know that that is my intent, even if there is not a request. These siting certificates need to mean something, and also the having them outside of where they were approved for can have long-term implications, potentially beyond just the property owner that's adjacent from whom they apparently are going to be able to provide a waiver. It could have impacts on others too. So I just want to be clear about that mm-hmm. that even without a request for a hearing or without any comments coming in, I still need more information on this one.
I agree. I think it's really a first step, a conversation we have to have with our staff and attorneys just to find out what kind of ability we have to make this kind of a waiver.
But I will say, too, in our tradition of doing things in a timely way, as long as we're able to be thorough, I am fine with going ahead and starting the time period for opportunity. So I think this is a good motion.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That's it for me.
By way of announcements, I not a lot here, except for our next commission meeting, like today, does not fall on a regular Wednesday situation. In fact, neither of our next two do. I remember when we scheduled these, they just didn't work out on Wednesdays, and so we had to kind of ping-pong them a little bit. The next one is on Tuesday, November 20th, 10 o'clock, this room. And I will just throw it out there, even though it's in advance, but since it's an abnormal day, the one after that is Thursday, December 6th. Those are the only announcements that I wanted.
So before we were yo-yoing on the one thing, and now we're ping-ponging?
I guess.
Yeah. I like the sad part is I totally completely understood.
And sometimes we even checkerboard.
I would use more.
Or we avoid checkerboarding, I should say.
Commissioner Crash says I'd use more football metaphors, but I don't want to hurt Commissioner Kudorczyk's feelings.
Maybe she would like the helmet back for just a little bit.
It makes me itchy.
Comfort.
Okay. With that, we will stand in recess. I'll take some questions from the press, followed by a short break, and then we will reconvene for the administrative portion of our meeting.
I just have a question for all of you. Wow. I'm hearing a little back feedback.
Oh, really?
Oh, there's a little digital delay, so I'll just do this.
Yes.
So anyway, what finally turned it to agree with the idea of using the TCJA, I got it right?
Right.
Tax Cut and Jobs Act, the money for that remediation of the plant in Fargo. What was the argument that sealed it for you?
For me, it was not just to repeat what I said earlier, determining whether or not customers should pay for the cleanup. And then when I reached that determination that they should pay for the cleanup, then it was really more of the mechanism in terms of how that payment would occur. And since the timing just worked out the way it did, and the TCJA was being assessed and those benefits were being brought forth at the same time that the cost of the cleanup was being determined, and it was just a coincidence, frankly. But I mean, these are very specific numbers when we're looking into the TCJA, and the dropping of going from 35% to 21% is 1,201,000, and then there's another 117,000 on EDIT that customers benefit from, but then there's a loss of 75,000 on amortization. So it wasn't, I think sometimes people would look at the number and maybe question whether or not it was just a convenient matching of the numbers. That's $1.243 million when you add them up, just $7,000 less than the 1.25, which is the estimated annual cost of cleaning it up. So again, when I had asked staff what's precedence on these types of things, is it a reasonable cost of doing business? Because sometimes unexpected things that aren't as favorable to the customer pays, it doesn't mean they're not reasonable. It's unfortunate, but it's a reality. So that's what did it for me. And then also, it seemed like a much cleaner way to arrive at that final net difference, which is essentially zero, versus making a larger process out of it. Because when that happens, that can negatively impact customers as well, because you have added costs of processing and analyzing additional data.
Do you have anything to add?
I do, but you can go first.
Well, for me, although, as I've said, I'm not completely convinced that the full cost of this is necessarily their responsibility, but I certainly think that by the end there's a likelihood that certainly some of it will be. And so can just as well be starting to accrue that. As Commissioner Krosh has mentioned, the timing is everything. That we were able to completely get the analysis of the TCGA benefits calculated out, and it's just about the time to start accruing some money for whatever, and that it's very unclear what that amount is going to be, but for whatever their responsibility is going to be for the cleanup. And so rather than having a slingshot effect on their rates, it seemed like we could just balance this out and move forward.
My vocabulary has expanded exponentially.
For me, it was the timing. And there really were, at one point, other issues being considered, and some of which came up on the meeting earlier today, but there's the DOE settlement that was in the mix at one point in talking about, you know, what money do customers have coming back and what are our future costs, and then the earnings, over earnings. All of those were on the table in at one point in terms of using those to offset some of this remediation cost as well. And so really between the DOE earnings, the earnings sharing, and the tax cuts, there's three refund mechanisms going back to customers and one new cost that we know they're going to have to be bearing some of the burden of. So it was really just balancing off one of those but customers will still be seeing a refund on those other ones shortly as well.
I think that's a great point, just in terms of how these things are broken down. That, I think, the level of transparency in doing it that way, it's very easy to go back and trace. You know, in terms of, okay, sometimes things do go up, but a lot of times they go down. But we blended two things, but I think it's pretty straightforward.
So you're telling me there were a lot of chess pieces involved?
Well, the chess pieces were ping-ponging, and then we had the checkerboard, which was kind of a yo-yo situation. But other than that, we just kind of slingshotted it.
What we're really trying to avoid is skyrocketing.
Landed
costs.
Where we had to land.
I have to gavel us.
But I do have another quick question, and this is on that solar project that you had the hearing on. Commissioner Christman, you were interviewed by my colleague, and he said you had some questions. Were all your questions answered at that hearing?
No. We'll be getting more information as we go. One of my big questions had to do with what this seed mix is going to look like, and they're going to be following up with some information. The Ag Commissioner's office was there and expressed also some concerns on that, and they know the things that are in place to get safe and certified seed, but you know, it's not like going out and buying some wheat seed or something like that. You know, they're a different mix of things. And so I don't know where the dealers are that where you acquire these kinds of things, but we need to be safe on that. And so some things like that, but kind of like in many of our siting hearings, there'll be some follow-up information. So no, my questions aren't all answered, but they know what they are, and we'll be moving forward, I guess, as they get that information filed for us.
There was something like 17 late filed exhibits, wasn't there? Or yeah, there was a long list of late filed exhibits.
There's quite a number of them. And then another big one for me is just contemplating more thoroughly the meaning of the exclusion for prime farmland. You know, it's one thing to build a pipeline across thousands of acres of non-prime farmland and occasionally crossing some very tiny fraction of an acre where you cross a valley and there's a little parcel that would qualify as prime farmland. That's one thing, but to take almost three sections in a block in the heart of the Red River Valley, I really need to think that through, and then they're going to be filing some information on that and making their point, and I will certainly read it and analyze it and help come to a conclusion.
What's unique about this, other than it's a first-time project to come before the commission, it's the first commercial solar project, is that unlike a pipeline, which you can farm over the top of, once it is buried and the topsoil is reapplied, I believe you can farm over the top of a pipeline. So that land goes back into use, and it's more about properly segregating topsoil from subsoil. With a solar farm, you're not going to farm between the panels. Wind farm, you can go around the turbine bases, for example. So this is really unique in that respect, in that this land is completely consumed, at least where the panels are located within the footprint area. I think there's approximately 300 acres that won't have panels on top of them, and then the balance would. You're just not simply going to farm around those. So part of it for me is researching how that landed within the rules to begin with.
Yeah, it's a rule that has its beginnings in the late 70s and excluding prime farmland, but also allowing the commission the discretion to waive it if if the applicant can prove that it has a minimal effect. But those terms are all very general. There's no definition to what the minimal effect, or what, I forget the term that might not even be the exact terminology, but that's the sense of it, like a minimal effect on production agriculture in that area or in the state, or is it the county or the township? There isn't a lot of definition there. And so we've seen companies ask for waivers, and we've granted them many times. But it hasn't been, there's never been since I've been here, and I don't think there has been since this was started. Well, maybe some of the facilities, but of a smaller size. But to my knowledge, not a facility like this that would cover 1,300 acres, all of which is prime farmland. And so that's the issue that we have to weigh. There's, you know, private property rights at stake as well, and a lot of different competing interests to think through. The community was strongly supporting this project. The landowners that have offered the easements to the company obviously are supporting the project and willing to have their land converted to this additional or different use. And so now it's up to us to think through what the term prime farmland means, and when it comes to application of a siting facility like this.
I think without question, and of course now I'd have to do the quick math on it, but I don't know if this is, what, 20 months into my time here, but this was without question, at least my perspective in terms of people coming in during the hearing, or speaking at the end, the public input part of it, you're exactly right. It was overwhelmingly positive and probably the most support I've seen. Not that we've had what I would call contentious projects per se, but some are. maybe that's a mild way of putting it, but... No, it that really stood out for me, just how receptive the community was in terms of getting this project, hoping to see that this project would be approved and built.
And one just a quick follow-up, because you were talking about prime farmland, I'm thinking, are you in the process of looking at reclamation rules and how they fit with a solar farm then?
That's certainly my intent, is that we need to redo our reclamation rules, and because this is just a different situation. You know, here we're talking long pilings instead of large blocks of concrete. The plan here is to cut those off and leave them, the pilings down, everything that's below 4 feet. And so this was just something, both our reclamation rules as well as the original siting things, I don't think anyone ever contemplated a utility-scale solar farm being involved. And one of the things that I think we have to be cautious of is sometimes, you know, many times, these rules are written, and they're written for what's known at the time, and then they stand the test of time until something completely new comes along. Well, when the new thing comes along, there are times in life when these rules and laws maybe don't make sense for what's in front of you, but no one ever thought of that beforehand. But that doesn't mean that you can just ignore the rules. We talk about it, I guess, at the federal level all the time, you know, Do you want judges that can make the law up as they go to fit what they would like to have happen, or to follow the law and the Constitution? And so I don't know, we're very well beyond the reclamation. Maybe this whole prime farmland exclusion thing, as we start, if one is proposed to be constructed, there probably will be more proposed. And we may need to look at those exclusions and see if they apply to siting as it's being done in 2018 and soon to be 2019.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question we're going to see more interest in solar within our state's borders as companies work to achieve their renewable portfolio standards issued by other states, if that impacts
and by them. Commercial customers.
Yeah, and by commercial.
There's a huge demand for renewables by large corporations that we're hearing more and more from utilities they have to meet.
Who would have thought it would work into image branding in terms of what type of energy you utilize? But it's evolving into that.
The point that it's affecting the market.
Yeah,
it's huge. The one thing I did want to mention on the reclamation, in addition to what Randy said, is that the company, some of these questions came up during the hearing, and even though we don't have rules in place that have been approved through the whole formal rules process for this project, we, and especially Randy, expressed concern about the reclamation, and the company expressed a willingness to address that in this project. So I do envision if it's ultimately approved, there would be some specific reclamation requirements included in the order or in a certificate that's signed by the company in advance that they are going to agree to do voluntarily. So I think it'll be covered, even though we don't have rules today to cover it on a broad scale.
Anything else?
One other quick thing. And I'm just trying to remember. Are you notified when there are power failures like the one that happened south and east of Bismarck today?
Yes.
You were notified? Mm-hmm. What, any of you live out there?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, then. Have you heard the cause?
No.
I've not.
Heard the cause, but I haven't been able to confirm.
It was an owl in a substation.
Pardon?
It was an owl in a substation. Normally you hear about squirrels, but it was an owl.
Jeez.
I thought it was a hoot. But it's true, it was an owl. That was the cause according to MDU.
Wow.
Yeah, I heard something to that effect earlier this morning, but I hadn't.
Not a very wise owl.
Yeah, no.
I hope he's all right because they're protected.
Yes.
Well, there's not probably a lot of evidence left.
Anything else? Okay, we will reconvene at 2:45 for the administrative portion of the meeting.